relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Dear friends, welcome to America First One-on-One. It is an exciting time to be alive. It's an exciting time to be an American. Things are happening. I know the senile old man in the White House is causing problems for all of us domestically and in the world. But his party, well, they've come to a crisis point. Here is a former Democrat state senator, Latina, who really tells it how it is with regards to the Democrat Party and her ethnic community.
My message is of extreme disappointment. I represented one of the most Democratic Latino districts in California, East LA. And whether we are Cuban American in Florida or Mexican American in South Texas, Nevada, or here in California, we are sending a very powerful message to the Democratic Party that enough is enough. Ya basta. We have choices. And we are looking beyond the Democratic Party that no longer represents the values that we held as a party of JFK.
I don't speak Spanish. I speak several other languages, but I think I get the gist of ya basta from Gloria Romero. That's the left. What does it mean for us, the good guys, the patriots, the people who believe in America? Let's ask a man who has all the answers. If you're not watching his video podcast or listening to him or reading his books, why not? He is Dr. Steve Turley, the author of numerous essential works. I'm just going to mention The Return of Christendom, also The New Nationalism, and the one that one of our team here says has the most beautiful color cover, Beauty Matters. Steve Turley, welcome back to America First One-on-One.
Dr. Seb, it's wonderful to be back with you. Thank you so much for having me.
You are a busy man. It is hard to keep up with you, the amount of content you put out there. For those who missed our last discussion, just give us a little potted of who Steve is, what he studied, and what you talk about most often.
Yeah, thank you for that. I started a YouTube channel about 5.5 years ago. It was actually November 1st, 2016, of course, when the election was coming up right around that time. And I predicted that Donald Trump was going to win because I thought this was going to be a Brexit election based on the studies that I did at Durham University, where I got my PhD out across the pond there. I came across some studies called post-secular studies. This is back in 2009 or so, 2010. And they basically were making the argument that the old globalist world order is more or less dead and a much more traditionalist national sovereignty-based world order was rising. I didn't believe it at the time. I didn't have any evidence of that with Obama. They were using Russia as an example or India or some Middle Eastern nations, and I just thought that was so far removed. But when I started seeing Brexit heat up, that's when I started to see, oh, so this is what they're talking about. And then when Donald Trump on the campaign trail started referring to himself as call me Mr. Brexit, I realized we've got something. There's some trends here that are very predictive. And thank God they brought you and others like you into the sphere of the White House. And I've been doing it ever since November 1st, 2016. And we're almost about to hit 900,000 subs on YouTube, if you can believe it. So
wow,
it's been an amazing
that
ride.
That is exciting. Follow this guy right now. It is Steve Hurley. The name is Dr. Turley Talks on Twitter. You'll find the YouTube channel. If it's the one with 900,000 followers, you've got the right Steve Turley. Steve, let's talk about the last few decades and the fact that there was a lot of lazy thinking, a lot of inaccurate thinking. If you look at Francis Fukuyama, who predicted the end of history and the last man and ideology's over with, I'm sure the people of Mariupol and Kiev have a bone to pick with Francis Fukuyama right now. What, for you, actually functions? What has traction in terms of categories? Are we having to throw out the old taxonomy? Here, one-on-one, we've got the luxury of a little bit more time. We can drill down. So if you look at political science, the left, the right, the neoliberal, the paleocon, do we have to jettison those and then come up with new monikers for what we are witnessing, whether it's Brexit or MAGA?
Yeah, in many respects, I think we are, because the new electorate is crossing the grain of the old political models. We're seeing something fascinating here, especially when you compare Brexit vote back in 2016, June 23rd, to what happened on November 8th, and it's increased ever since then. But basically what you had in Brexit, what was so fascinating, is you had a majority of Labour voters. That's Britain's leftist party there. They're Democrats. The majority of Labour voters were all pro-Brexit, huge amount of them. Whereas every single one of their MPs, their members of parliament, were all pro-Remainers. You want to stay with the bullies in Brussels of the EU. And you saw even that with Theresa May, with the Conservatives. Majority of Conservatives, Tories wanted to leave. But many of their leaders wanted to stay. Even Bojo originally, Boris Johnson, was a Remainer at first, but he did change his position on that. So, and the politics have had to change in accordance with the change of the electorate. And I think it's largely because a new division has opened up. You know, Scott Rasmussen and Doug Schoen were really ahead of the curve back in 2010 with their book Mad as Hell on the Tea Party movement. And they right there said, based on the data that they were analyzing, that the old animosity between Republican and Democrat, or, you know, Tory and Labor, conservative and liberal, that tended to be functioning around economic issues, that was dead. And a new political division was opening up, and that's the people versus the permanent political class. And there was this radical sense that the political class governs according to their own values, their own interests, their own concerns. They're becoming increasingly alienated from the values, interests, and concerns of the people. We've got data, for example, from the Chatham House, a think tank in Britain, that found that nearly 70% of MPs, so political class, believed that immigration was always good for Britain, whereas only 20% of the population actually believed that. So there, you could see this massive divide growing, and that's what makes Trump so amazing. Is out of the 15 or 16 GOP candidates back in 2016, he was the only one that tapped into that new paradigm of the people versus the political class, and that could pit us against Republicans, i.e. Romney, every bit as much as it could pit us against Democrats. It's the people versus the ruling class. That's the new political divide.
But Steve, you're not telling me that that scoundrel Karl Marx, right? Are we in a class-based conflict right now? Is it the elite class versus everybody else?
Yeah, I think that's one way of looking at it, but I think it's very reductionist to reduce it to that kind of economics or something akin to that. No, I think this is much larger. There's a sense that the globalist order, the so-called rules-based order, that basically replaced a civilization with a system. It replaced Western civilization with a system that could be superimposed, a political and economic system that could be superimposed on all people, all times, all places. It didn't matter who you were. And then we even went a step further and we said, you know, the level of your sophistication will be measured to what extent you start buying into these very bougie cosmopolitan values. That system that Francis Fukuyama argued was basically the end of history, the end in our political and economic evolution, as it were, that system is falling apart. It's drowning in many respects. So you know, you've got, for example, the Clash of Civilizations thesis, Sam Huntington, where he basically argued that what happened to the Soviet Union was not the end of history, as Fukuyama argued. It was but the latest manifestation of the end of the old modernist industrial liberal globalist order. You had more or less three versions in the 20th century that wanted to take over the world. And that's the key to modernity. Modernity is imperial by its nature. It wants a one-size-fits-all political and economic system. You had liberal globalism. You had Soviet communism, of course, and you had Nazi fascism. Nazi fascism more or less gets knocked out in the war. Then you had the Cold War and this bipolar world. And then when Soviet Union fell, a lot of the rise of the neocons said, okay, it's the Pax Americana. Now that we found the one size fits all order for all people's times and places. And Huntington said is, no, you don't get what happened. What happened to the Soviet Union is precisely what's going to happen to the old liberal bougie globalist order.
It's just lazy thinking. He doesn't do any of that. Dr. Turley talks on Twitter. You've got to follow him on YouTube. I'm Sebastian Gorka. Subscribe to the podcast. Go to your favorite platform. Go to Spotify. Look for my name and you'll never, ever miss an episode. Dear friends, have you registered for our Stand With Israel tour? We are going to the Holy Land 10 days later this year to literally walk where our Lord and Savior walked the earth. And I'll be joined by my Salem colleague, Dinesh D'Souza, and his lovely wife, Debbie. We will be where the places you've read about in the New Testament. We're actually going to be there. Temple Mount, the Garden of Gethsemane, the shores of the Sea of Galilee. Even if you've been before, you haven't been with me and Dinesh. Register today for the trip of a lifetime. You do not want to miss it. I'm not vaccinated and I'm going. Israel knew they got it wrong with their vaccination policies. So join us. You won't regret it. Call 855-565-5519 or go to standwithisraeltour.com. That's 855-565-5519 or standwithisraeltour.com. Mike Lindell has a true passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their lives. Therefore, he created the Giza Dream bed sheets. They look and feel incredible, which translates to an even better night's sleep for you. Mike's latest amazing deal is the sale of the year. For a limited time, you will receive 60% off the Giza Dream sheets that come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. You'll receive a full set for as low as $39.99. And for a limited time, with any purchase, you'll receive Mike's soft cover book free when you use promo code GORKA. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and use promo code Gorka. Along with this offer, you'll also get deep, deep discounts on all his MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow towel sets, and so much more. Call 800-829-8468, promo code Gorka. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code GORKA. Dr. Turley, Steve, this elite class seems to be immune to any inject of reality. I'll just mention two recent stories that you can jump off and further unpack. So number one, we have CNN Plus, that is the new subscriber-based additional content for CNN, which on a good night gets 500,000 viewers. This humble radio show gets 3 million every day just on radio. And then they want people to pay $5 for more content and nobody's watching. And 29 days later, after spending $300 million on this new venture, they have to shut it down because nobody's subscribed. If you're living in the real world where, you know, everybody can access, you know, Steve Turley on YouTube for free, you can get more content than you could ever possibly consume on YouTube or Rumble or anywhere else. The idea that CNN executives thought this was a good idea is probably a great example of this elite's myopia. And then on top of that, let's look at politics. The idea that we have viral videos, more than you can count, of captains, stewardesses, whole planes full of passengers cheering, rejoicing, singing songs as they're taking their masks off. And 48 hours later, the Biden administration says, yeah, we're probably going to appeal it and get you to put your mask back on. These people, this elite class, Steve, they don't live in the world we live in, do they?
No, they don't. They don't. That was so beautifully put, too. Yeah, I mean, there's so many levels to think through here. I think at one level, I mean, liberalism just by its nature deals with what's called totalizing categories. So, you know, this is where you get into things like human rights and women's rights and minority rights and LGBT rights. And because they're so enamored with that, they actually believe there's no basis for dissent from particularly how those rights are applied. If you're anti-human rights, then by definition, you have to be anti-human. If you're anti-LGBT rights, by definition, you have to be anti-LGBT. Or if you're anti-women's rights, by definition, you have to be, you know, a sexist. And so this is where they just this is what wokeism is. Wokeism does not allow for any legitimate dissent. And therefore, it is the most anti-democratic ideology imaginable. It's absolutely horrific. Yeah, in terms of CNN Plus, I mean, what can I say? Poor Chris Wallace. I mean, talk about the last person anyone's going to take stock tips from, you know? I mean, and I agree with you. Who are these investors who actually thought that a company whose ratings are down 90% from where they were in January of last year, who ever thought that if their free offerings weren't being watched, somehow their paid programming would? Again, this is where ideology kind of meets, or not ideology, but more ideas in terms of the fall of globalism and the rise more of a nationalist populist world. This is where it really meets the practical and the material. We are shifting away from the old mass industrial society to what's called a network society. And the mass industrial society was a society built around the big cities. So this is where you did get kind of this communist Marxist notion of the bourgeois versus the proletariat. And this is where corporations like the New York Times and the Washington Post and LA Times, Chicago Tribune and NBC and ABC, they all had monopolies over the kind of information that we had access to. That age is gone. And we're moving into a network society where virtually all major news events today are first reported via video shot by an eyewitness's iPhone. Gone are the satellite trucks and the like. So the world in many ways is bypassing the old media in the same way that email and text messaging and Skyping is bypassing the post office. And the media can no more define what's legitimate information today than the post office can define what's legitimate mail. So they're Jurassic, and they're slowly and painfully learning so.
Is that why everybody in the establishment, Steve, suddenly within the space of 24 hours hates Elon Musk because of his bid for Twitter and this attempt to break the cartel?
It's exactly what he has been saying. He certainly said that with Netflix. He said Netflix is losing and just lost, what, 30, 40 billion in market valuation. When you combine that, Business Insider, for a call, said that when you combine the last two quarters' losses, Netflix may lose upwards of over $90 billion in market valuation when all is said and done. And Elon Musk said because they're so woke, they've become unwatchable, is his word. So, yeah, I mean, they hate Elon Musk because in many respects, if you think it through, he's turned free speech into a business model, a very lucrative one at that, right? It can be rinsed and repeat all over the place. Hello, Peter Thiel and the like. Now, obviously, the prerequisites, you got to be a billionaire. You got to have an extra 40 bill lying around somewhere. I don't know, Dr. Seb, if you got that, but we'll be hanging out if you do. But that's number one. But not quite. We're getting there. So that's the first thing. You got to be a billionaire. And then second thing, you got to establish yourself as a bona fide, you know, red-pilled free speech champion, which Musk has effectively done, whether it's his tweeting out, you know, of the cryptic take the red pill back in 2020 or the myriad of tweets he's tweeted out, very critical of Silicon Valley's crushing of free speech, you name it. So those are the first two steps. And then the third step is you boldly go into a woke company that's upsetting a lot of people with cancel culture nonsense, and you buy up the largest share of stock in that company. Force your way onto the board of directors. If that doesn't work, then you offer to buy the company outright and the stock explodes. I mean, he's more than made his money back at this point. So he's turned free speech into a business model.
I like that phrase. I wrote that down as the first time you said that. We're talking to Stephen Turley. You've got to listen to his show. You've got to follow him on Twitter. You've got to read his books. Dear friends, if you like what we do here at America First, don't forget the store where you can get all your MAGA America First gear. It's sebgorkastore.com. Everything there is made in the United States. All the Let's Go Brandon gear, all of my books are available. And also the most popular item, it's Zelensky's message to Biden when he said, why don't you run away, we'll send you a plane. What did Zelensky say? He said, I don't need a ride, I need ammunition. Get yours today, sebgorkastore.com. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorkastore.com. Okay, so one thing that strikes me in all of your works, and let's list them again. So you've got The Return of Christendom. These are the essential reads from Dr. Turley. You've got The New Nationalism and Beauty Matters. And it's clear from your podcast and from your videos that you are a real optimist, Steve. You're a man of faith. You believe the secularists, you know, can be challenged, and you have a very positive attitude to this challenge. What makes you think that they can be defeated? Because I look at the last 5-6 years, and I see a man who garnered more votes than any other incumbent president, who was banned from Twitter, who was probably removed from office illegally in that election. I see a handful of MAGA candidates who are, you know, denuded of their committee membership, who are lambasted by the mainstream. What makes you think that beyond the personal life, the religious life, the family life, that this revitalized conservatism can actually win politically as well?
We can look at it so many different angles. I'll stick with one that wraps up nice bow everything we've been talking about. And that is the reality that wokeism, which is the value system of our political elite, whether it's politics, corporate, you name it, university and the like, wokeism is unsustainable. Absolutely and totally unsustainable. And we have data on that, which is really fascinating. Eric Kaufman of the University of London wrote a very fascinating article on the data that he analyzed that found that when you ask any amount of Democrats whether they support any woke issues, so CRT to kids, transgender athletes and women's sports, you name it, they're always split on their answer. It's about 50-50, 60-40, that kind of thing. We actually see it in the Disney, in the parental rights bill, or now law, in Florida, where a Fox poll found that 52% of Democrats actually supported that. It was really fascinating. However, when you ask Republicans the same question, do you support teaching CRT in our schools? Do you support transgender athletes in women's sports? What answer do you think you get? And I've done this. I've done this in one of the American Freedom Tours, audience, you know, in Phoenix, 3,000 people. I said, you know, what's your answer? And a whole stadium went, no. What we're finding is wokeism is splitting the Democrats and it's uniting the Republicans. It's splitting the Democrats and it's uniting. So in a very practical sense, this is precisely why Glenn Youngkin won such a resounding victory in Virginia. This is why we're seeing school boards, even in San Francisco, starting to boot the most woke of woke from among them, and patriots, particularly in Lancaster County and so forth, all getting appointed to the boards, school boards. We're starting to see a real change in our nation by pushing the culture wars. If you push the culture wars, they've moved decisively in our direction because they're splitting the left and uniting the right. And that is a recipe for some pretty impressive victory.
But isn't there a tension between attitudes to cultural issues and then tribal political identity? Because if you look at the Hispanic community or even the Black community, and you look at their, you know, their intimate cultural values, they're very conservative, what they believe in. But they vote Democrat for a large part. So beyond the polling figures, do you think the sympathy is actually being translated into political identity, or perhaps the more trenchant question, a willingness to leave your political tribe?
It's such a good question. And the answer is yes. It's fascinating. Now, it's going to be harder for some over others. But there is a process that Matthew Goodwin and Matthew Goodwin and Roger Eatwell, two British scholars, in their book Nationalist Populism, they write about. It's a phenomenon known as de-alignment, and we're seeing it all over the place. We saw it in 2016. We had almost 200 counties in Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, and Pennsylvania that had voted for the Democratic presidential candidate in every single election since Mondale, suddenly switch and vote for Donald Trump, sometimes by 20 points. We have to remember Iowa voted for Dukakis in 1988. The white working class back then was solidly FDR New Deal Democrat. They have shifted overwhelmingly now so that twice now Iowa has voted for Trump by a 10-point margin. We're seeing the same thing in Ohio, J.D. Vance, for example, pulling away. We're seeing in Pennsylvania, where I'm near, with particularly Doug Mastriano and the like. So I think we are seeing this de-alignment where people have been aligned with a political party for decades, suddenly realize that, like Ronald Reagan said, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me. There was a study that found that in England, 50% of the population in the 1960s felt a very strong fidelity to one of the major political parties, the Tories or Labor. Today, it's less than 10%. So we're seeing the white working class. We're seeing that with Brexit. We're seeing with Le Pen and France and the like. So
that is a fascinating statistic, which provides huge room for maneuver for new political movements. Okay, so here's the big question for the foreseeable future when it comes to, I think, what you celebrate and what you represent, Steve, is really Western civilization, the Judeo-Christian values upon which America was built, and America as the apotheosis of that value system. There is, however, a problem in our community, in our tribe, if you will. And I look at the events of the last 8 weeks and I'm very disturbed. I see, look, I've got my baggage. My parents suffered as children under fascism, then under communism. My father was anti-communist, was betrayed by Kim Philby, arrested, tortured, imprisoned, given a life sentence at the age of 20, only to be liberated a few years later in the Hungarian Revolution. So I don't like communists, and I especially don't like secret police officers and the KGB. And I see, since the invasion of Ukraine, something that I didn't expect I'd ever see as a conservative. People who say they're in my tribe, who say they're conservatives, who say they're Republicans, siding with the KGB colonel, saying that he's some kind of champion of Christendom, despite the fact that he tortured Christians as a KGB officer. Some idea that Zelensky, the short Jewish comedian, is somehow a Nazi, despite losing multiple relatives in the Holocaust. What is to be done with those amongst us who harbor some strange ideas, conspiratorial ones, go against everything? I remember when all conservatives hated KGB officers. It didn't matter whether you were a Buchananite or a Reaganaut. Right. If he's a KGB officer, right, he's a bad guy. Sorry. What do you think of these voices? Do we ignore them, or is there some ideological, intellectual vaccine we can apply?
It's a phenomenal question, and we're going to have to see how this works out. I think the way I would explain it is, and how I've explained it in my vids, is that there is it's almost like the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Yeah. They're seeing Putin as someone who is breaking and crushing liberal globalism, making Biden look pathetically incompetent. Of course, we don't need Putin to do that, but and showing the bullies in Brussels just how weak they are and how anemic they are. And then they're being bolstered with this notion of the rise of the civilization state, not just in Russia, but in China and India as well. So they just see it as, you know, it's a very, it's, I do think it's a kind of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. When all is said and done, none of them are going to be moving to Russia.
Right.
None
but,
of them
but
are going
me,
to
for
be
me,
taking up residency in Russia.
That's a really, that's a really good way of explaining it. But how do we get to a point where adults with triple digit IQs have such pedestrian childlike thought patterns? I mean, seriously, if George Soros doesn't like Xi Jinping, does that make Xi Jinping my friend?
Right.
I mean, because this is, you know, the idea that, Putin doesn't like homosexuality. Okay, but he murders journalists who uncover corruption about his regime. So it's not, I mean, I hate the word nuance because the left uses it as an excuse for cowardice. But really, when did conservatives get to a point where they couldn't think in three dimensions?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I do think most likely it's derived from the idea that ideology has more or less been replaced by identity. So if the 20th century was the century of political ideology, you know, communism versus capitalism, the 21st century is the politics of identity. You know, who's with me? Who's on my side? Who am I? That kind of thing. We see that both on the left and the right, with certainly with the left with the BLM, that's allowed identity. But if you want national sovereignty or Western civilization, no, you're not allowed to have that. So I just think there's a sense that there is no friend. There is no outside of Trump, but there's no political friend that is really defending the notion of nation, culture, custom and tradition. And we have to admit, you know, when Putin talks, he uses that language, as is Xi Jinping, as does Narendra Modi. That's the language of the new civilization we're moving into, worldwide civilization. So no question, the new, I mean, again, no, none of them are going to be going and applying for a Russian passport. I just think in the end, they just think that the globalist world, right, the globalist world order is just so rotten to its core. Woke. It's very similar to what Tucker is saying. It's like, you know, look, Putin's not trying to cancel me. Putin's not calling me names. It's Pelosi. She's my enemy. She's the problem. And so it is, it's a very, very complicated situation. I actually just did a live stream today on the way I'm Orthodox, so the way, and happy, blessed Good Friday to all our Orthodox brothers out there. But just, I did a whole live stream on how the Orthodox Church may have been irreparably split as a result of this war. So it's a very complicated, very tragic thing, no question. And the way it plays out for different people is going to be comparably different and comparably complex as well.
Yeah, I have to respond to that Tucker line that, you know, Nancy Pelosi may want to crush Tucker and remove his freedom of speech, but that doesn't make Vladimir Putin a good guy. It's lazy thinking. This is a man with weapons who is breaking international taboos of invading independent countries. So the idea that that's irrelevant, it wasn't irrelevant in 1939, it wasn't irrelevant in 1941, it wasn't irrelevant in 2001, and it's not irrelevant now. So come on, guys, try a little bit harder. Conservatives are smarter. Let's actually act smarter as well. Last point on this, a very wise man once opened my eyes to this. You use the word ideology again and again and again, and I want to run this by you. Robert Riley, who wrote The Closing of the Muslim Mind and some amazing works on natural law, said, you got to get it right, Seb.
Yeah.
It's not a competition of ideologies. Everybody else has an ideology, whether they're communists, fascists, or jihadis. We don't have an ideology. If you're a Christian, if you're a conservative, we have the truth. Right, the ideology is a prism that distorts the truth. I want you to think about that question and we'll get your reaction. So I very rarely do this. I don't leave people hanging. I don't give them time to think, but I just did with Dr. Turley. Please follow him, read his books, listen to his podcasts. What do you think of my friend who said, you know, the real difference is we don't have an ideology, we have the truth. Your response, Steve?
Ah, my, the truth. I am the way, the truth, and the life, right? Yeah. This is the beauty of Western civilization. This is why it's given us, I believe, the most amazing literature, art, architecture, music, and poetry, and drama, and politics, and economics imaginable. My wife is from Japan. We both met at a music conservatory. I was a classical guitarist. She's a pianist. And she came from a far Asian nation to come to one of the best conservatories in the world to study Western music, because it has so much attraction, so much pull just from the nature of beauty. So I think he's on to something. Look, I mean, in the end, you know, again, this is Good Friday for the Orthodox. We have to remember that, you know, the cross says it all. And the cross is not an ideology. The cross is truth, and truth transforms. And the transformation is found in the fact that in the cross, I see who I really am. We see who we really are. We think we're cool. We think we got it all together. Believe me, I think I've got it all together until I start talking to my wife and my kids and I find out how bad I got it. But I even have to look at my wife and my kids. I just have to look at the cross, right? Because the cross teaches me that when truth comes into our lives in a world of lies and despair and power and ugliness, it can only appear as crucified. We destroy truth. We crush truth. And we all do it. We all participate in that. And then that leads to the second question. The cross reveals who I am. Then the second question is, well, what kind of God would do that? What kind of God would submit himself to that kind of humiliating punishment, horror, just to show me who I really am? Well, it's a God of infinite and eternal love, a love that cannot be destroyed, a love that cannot be crushed, that cannot be annihilated. And that's what the resurrection is all about. The resurrection is the blossoming, the breaking forth of that love that declares to all the world that it cannot be destroyed. It can only transfigure. And so in the cross, I see who I really am, and I see who God really is. And all of a sudden, in that moment, the most horrific instrument of excruciating torture and death, crucifixion, transfigures in front of my very eyes into a tree of life. And that is the gift that we have at the very heart of Western civilization.
Yeah, it is stunning. I have to remind myself several times every year, and when I first realized that it was quite a seminal moment, a Damascene moment for me, that we take it for granted. We don't even think about it, that our civilization's symbol is a torture instrument. No other civilization has a pair of handcuffs or an Iron Maiden or a thumbscrew as the most powerful symbol of that civilization. The crucifix wasn't for Jesus. The crucifix was the worst form of death penalty used by the Romans. And it was used on the Appian Way for thousands of slaves and gladiators who revolted at one time, literally thousands of crucifixes along the highway. And this thing, this common torture instrument, became the most important symbol of our civilization. Is something we should meditate on, and we should remind ourselves of every now and again. I have one more question for you, Steve, and I could continue this for hours. Please follow this man and read his books. Give me some hope. I'm a guy in the media, in the political world. I try to be a good Christian, go to church with my family. Are you seeing some signs out there in the Catholic faith, in the Orthodox faith? I see some amazing people, some amazing bishops coming out of Africa. Are you seeing signs of hope, of some revivification of Western civilization, Steve?
I am. It's humble, and that's exactly the way it should be. Tends to be it's bottom up in many respects. But we are seeing we talked about last time we were together, Seb, a demographic revolution that's happening even faster than demographers had thought, where conservative Christians, particularly conservative religious in general, are having lots and lots of kids. They're homeschooling them. They're sending them to Bible colleges and all the parallel institutions and the like. And now we have the data in, and we're finding that about 80% of them are retaining that faith into adulthood.
Wow.
So we are seeing a very slow but very real transformation. It's not just happening in the United States. It's happening in Europe as well. It's going to take a little longer in Europe, obviously, because of the sort of the ravages of secularization there that we didn't have in our Midlands, as it were. But as that works itself out, starting around 2030, we're supposed to start seeing the culture war shift dramatically to the conservative traditionalist side of things. And I can't wait for that to happen, I'll tell you that.
You're not the only one. It's an exciting time to be alive, dear friend. TurleyTalks.com is the website. We've already won, thanks to our Lord and Savior, but we are winning again here down on Earth. Right. Dr. Turley Talks on Twitter. You've got to follow him, read his books. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This has been America First One-on-One. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, keep your head on a swivel, watch your six, hold the line, never give up, never give in. And stay frosty.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
There's no better proof that our country is being run by a deranged group of extremists than the treacherous crusade against American energy and Ohio energy. They see what you're doing to your energy and your energy industry with their fake Green New Deal policies. Biden and the Democrat socialists have done what our worst enemies could never, ever have dreamed of doing to our country.
That was the president at the weekend in Ohio, in Delaware, Ohio. Welcome, dear friends. Greetings. This is America First with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka. I have lots of cuts. Mr. G has been working very, very hard. Things to share with you. Lots of great clips from the president's speech there, but I think we've got a topic for the show today for the next 3 hours. Quite stunning. According to the breaking news of 7 minutes ago, Twitter has accepted the center, multi-center billion dollar offer from Canadian, South African, American Elon Musk for him to buy the most influential social media platform on the planet. We will discuss it. We planned this in advance. We looked into our crystal ball. We knew that, we felt it in our marrow that it was going to happen. Of course, I didn't believe it when I came into our pre-production meeting and I heard the news that they're considering his latest offer right now, and then it just happens. I thought, I don't know if it's going to happen. Well, it doesn't matter, because we were ready in any case. The man who is the CEO of the conservative First Amendment alternative to Twitter, Truth Social, former chairman of the Intelligence Committee of Congress, will be with us momentarily, Devin Nunes, to discuss what this means for President Trump and for all people who believe in the First Amendment. Let's discuss with our team, because I need some reaction. I need some feedback. I need you, dear listener, to tell me what you think. So after we talk to Devin, we will take calls. We'll reserve at least 2 blocks for this first hour, couple of blocks in the next hour, because do we trust Elon? Does the president go back to Twitter? What happens to Truth Social? I want you to sound off. So call us on 1-833-33-GORKA, G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-833-334-6752. You can also contact us at our website. That is sebgorka.com, S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorka.com. Let's start. Let's go with the man who's always sideways on my monitor. Don't ask why. It's a technical thing. He is John Jr. John, did you expect this news of 9 minutes ago?
I had an inkling that they might have to do this at some point, considering that we've been talking for the last week about the shareholders being able to sue and overrule the Twitter board. So I thought it might happen, but just like you, I'm still a bit floored right now because this is huge news. Nothing like this has ever really happened before, and it's hopefully a really good thing for free speech continuing on.
Yeah, so to do the math here, he bought about 9% of the shares himself, and then the board in toto, the whole board, only owns about 10%, which means the vast majority, 80% of the shares, are owned by average people, investment funds, and so forth. And they just, looks like it, they liked the offer of Elon Musk. And as our next conversant, Eric, said in our meeting, or was it? I don't know if it was Eric. It might have been Mr. G. Biggest purchase in history, and I think that is correct, whichever one of you said it. Eric, your reaction to the news of just 10 minutes ago.
Oh, my goodness. I said in the show prep meeting, I'll say it again. This is, we know the terms red pill and blue pill, right? There is a similar term on the online lexicon of white pill and black pill. White pill being a bit of good news and black pill being bad news. This has got to be the biggest white pill since President Trump winning the election. I think this, the importance of this really cannot be overstated. Twitter, as you said, it's the most influential social media platform. It was always Trump's biggest platform, 90 million followers.
Yes.
He was in the top five most followed accounts in the history of the website. This is massive, and especially going back into 2024 in the future, or even 2022 right now, the midterms, this is huge. This is the biggest blow the left has taken in a long time, and watching them cry and just seethe and whine about it is so delicious, because they know how powerful this
is. But you said something in the pre-show meeting about President Trump and Twitter. What did you say?
I think he needs to get back on Twitter. I think because there's no doubt in my mind a large part of this, of what Musk choosing to do this, was to get Trump back online, because there's no question the censoring of the sitting president of the United States is one of the most egregious acts of censorship in modern history. And Trump really needs that platform. That always was his biggest megaphone. Yeah, he was big on Instagram and Facebook, but Twitter was the one. It was his signature, right? At real Donald Trump, the same profile picture all those years, the 3 a.m. tweets at Kim Jong-un. Like, that was a huge part of his campaign, his presidency. So yeah, I eagerly await his return to Twitter as a result of this.
However, let's not forget, and we're going to be talking to the CEO of Truth Social, that is President Trump's social media platform. I don't think he can go back to Twitter straight away. First, Elon Musk has to clean it up. He has to get back automatically his 93 million followers, and the algorithms have to be fixed so as to prevent conservatives being edited. Let's talk to John L. John L., I didn't get a chance to talk to you. You're far too busy making sure the Starship Enterprise is going to work on time. What's your stand on this breaking news of just 12 minutes ago?
I honestly have absolutely no idea what to say.
What? Are you? This is radio. You can't say that. Make something up quickly.
I don't know. I don't know. I got nothing.
He's got nothing. Well, I know somebody who will have something to say. He is our in-house cynic, Mr. G, hiding behind that TV screen over there, being pointed at by Eric. Hello. First things first, you always have a very good sense of what's really happening. Did you expect this news of 11 minutes ago?
No, I did not expect it at all. I did not think there was any way they're going to let him buy Twitter.
Are you going to enjoy the left melting down like they've never melted down before?
We'll see, because I'm not exactly sure what this is all about.
So you don't trust Elon, or you think he can't turn Twitter around?
No, I'm not saying he's an anti-free speech guy. I'm not saying he's a liberal, but nobody is going to spend $43 billion for free speech. That's not why he bought it. He bought, especially for a company that's never made money. That's the other thing. He has some other angle. Part of it might be the free speech, but that's not the only reason that he did this. And so, that's all that people are talking about.
So when he said literally at a conference, what was it, 6-7 days
ago? Yeah, the TED Talk.
the TED Talk, and he said, the money thing is irrelevant. This isn't a business decision. This is a principle decision. You think he's blowing smoke?
Absolutely. I really wish I knew what the motive is, but there's some other motive there. Free speech might be part of it. I hope it is, but that's not the main reason that he's buying Twitter.
So it's some other ulterior motive. He has been saying free speech is important, but there's something else going on. If anybody can find out for us what it is, then I think it's going to be Mr. G. That is the team. Our vast, huge team has given you their opinion. NPR has 36 people to produce one. I'm not joking. 1 hour of radio every morning, including, and again, not a joke, as Biden would say, look it up, including a chef. Yeah. A chef for the staff of a... Yeah, I know, John, where is our chef? I know. Where is our chef? That is the question. Salem, if you're listening out there, David, where is our chef? I mean, got to be healthy because you see I've lost 22 pounds already on this PhD weight loss program. So it's got to be healthy, low carbs, okay, high protein, nothing with sugar in it. But a chef could be just the right thing at least once a week. How about once a week just to celebrate news like this one? Elon does have some disturbing connections to China in terms of business and what he's doing there. But dropping a cool, what is it, 40, 50, who knows what the final deal was, $60 billion to buy this. It's got to be more than that because that was just 10%. What is it, $400 billion? Whoa. We will keep you updated wherever you are, whatever you're doing. You've got to subscribe to the podcast right now. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Write a review, share the links. We have amazing interviews every single day, one-on-one. You don't want to miss a millisecond, a nanosecond of the show. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, make sure you are a subscriber. Next, Devin Nunes here on America First.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.